West Tigers fans, Graham Annesley said that Appy Coruscant didn't have a good grip on the ball. Well, let's see if he can go get a grip himself. We'll talk about that and the rest of the game on the West Life podcast. Welcome into another episode of the West Life Podcast. I am your host, Josh Barnett. Please give us a follow at West Life Pod on Instagram and Twitter. And you can support the show, patreon.com/West Life. And to find all those things, you can go to westtigers.com.au. Just drop the S, spell the team's name incorrectly, westtigers.com.au. That'll redirect you to our link tree. It has all the links to where you can find us. If you're listening on audio, welcome. If you want to join us live, go to our YouTube. Please subscribe. We're getting oh so close. We're in the 900s, pushing towards that four figures. Want to raise the bat and get to 1,000 by the end of the season. I think we can do it. I think we're in the 920s or something at the moment. And welcome to all our beautiful viewers coming in on YouTube and see them all rolling in. Most loyal fans in sport, Australian sport. We have to be. We keep getting tortured as West Tigers fans, and you guys show up and listen to us talk about another loss. We really appreciate it. I'll go to my co-hosts, and I only have one at the moment. We have the stats man, Mr. Thompson. How are you this evening?
Yeah, g'day, Josh. G'day, everyone who's listening in. I'm all right tonight, Josh. It's a bit of a weird mixture of emotions. There's a bit of frustration. There's a bit of anger. There's a bit of sadness as well. But in saying that, there's still a lot of optimism for the future. So, yeah, a bit of a strange mix.
Seen a few all of our regulars in here. Chris, Carla, Riff Raff coming in from Miami, Florida. Cookie, John, Wilk, Hunter, Ashton, and of course Shane Cole, loyal Patreon himself. Righto, we don't have Roberto at the moment. We'll see where he is. I think we literally were just chatting, and as I was doing the intro, he's dropped out, but maybe it's his turn tonight. But anyway, we'll talk about West Ashfield. Here he is, right on cue from the Red Room. Roberto, we lost you there for a little bit, but you're back. Welcome.
Yeah, good evening, boys. Hope you're all well. Hope you all had a great weekend. What a start to the night, guys. I go into Safari and copy and paste, and it wanted me to open a StreamYard app. So I've never had a StreamYard app, but it's just got me to open up and join this way. So apologies for being a little bit late.
It wouldn't be a show without that, but we promise it's all sorted now. One place that will always have it sorted, West Ashfield, the best place to watch the game live and loud on. What are we playing this week? I haven't even thought about it. Saturday afternoon. We're playing the Doggies on, we'll preview that game Wednesday night. But if you don't want to head out to a core stadium, which might be our home ground from next year, we'll see what happens there. But head out to West Ashfield, watch it on the big screen, get a feed at either the new Bellagio Italian restaurant or the new Chinese dumpling. Have a succulent Chinese meal while you watch the footy. Schooner of what's Blocker's beer? I gave him a plug the other week. No, I can't remember. Front row lager. Great on tap, that one. Righto, we might as well get straight into our headline part, and that's Appy Coruscant's no try. So I've clipped the Graham Annesley this afternoon talking about this incident. So let's get underway straight into it. Here is Graham Annesley talking about the rule itself.
Now, of course, then you go from that to this, which is at the other end of the spectrum, where there is a relatively minor dispossession of the ball. But there is one, and again, we'll have another look at it in a moment, and then catches up and doesn't re-grip the ball before it hits the ground, does catch up just before it hits the ground, but doesn't have the opportunity to re-grip the ball and forces the ball on the ground. And everyone's saying, well, that's just a try. Why can't the bunker award it? And just as we looked at with the Trbojevic incident, we're talking about maybe, you know, a leg, half a leg, the difference between something that is legal or not. We're talking about, does the ball come away from the hand and does he catch up with the ball again without re-gripping it? So that's what the rule says. So let's just have another look at this and a couple of these angles.
As I'll get your opinion in a second, I've got to bring up, I forgot to read out Brandon W's super chat, and he's thrown us $15 straight off the bat. Brandon W says, such a stigma around the Tigers with officials and stereotypes. Winning games will kill that a little bit, but no matter how hard we try, we never get accountability. I feel sorry for the boys and staff. Thank you, Brandon. He's, man, every single episode he's throwing us the money. Appreciate it, Brandon. First super chat of the night. Right, as you were talking off air and you were promising to keep the naughty language to a minimum, but you are fuming at this no try.
Get him, Aaron.
Honestly, mate, fuming is very much an understatement. The thing that frustrates the crap out of me about this is the lack, not just the lack of consistency, but how the bunker has an obligation, I guess is the word for it, to rule on the basis of what the on-field referee has said. I don't understand how the bunker can come in this particular situation and say with 100% certainty that the ball was not re-gripped. I've heard a lot of players, like a lot of ex-players in a few different formats, and basically saying that there's no physical way to re-grip the ball once you've lost possession of it, A, because of the size of your ball and the ball, and because of the downward pressure that you're trying to place the ball on the ground with. Like, it's a nigh on impossible feat to do. So in that case, every time there's a little fumble or a little bobble or whatever in the in goal, it's got to be a no try. How can you say that one situation is different to another when the ball basically hasn't been re-gripped? And I want to compare it to the try that Tom Burgess scored against us in Golden Point in 2021, I think it was, where the on-field referee in Golden Point didn't award the try at that end of the field. It looked like he was about to, but you never know. He might have sent it up no try. Brooksy runs the ball down the other end, plants it under the goalpost because it looked like it had been lost. How can you say, and then the referee goes down to the other end of the field, follows Brooks and awards the try to us down the other end. So that basically means he's saying it's a no try to the Rabbits and a try to the Tigers. In that case, how can you overrule the on-field referee and say with 100% certainty he's grounded that ball? Because he hadn't. There's no bloody way in hell he had. It kind of slid off the back of his wrist and he kind of planted it on the ground with downward pressure from his wrist. So how the hell is that not a try? Is that a try? And what happened to Appy on the weekend? Not a try. How is the bunker coming in, reversing these decisions, and we always seem to be on the wrong end of them because they can't make up their freaking mind about the goddamn rules that they've created?
Rob, anything to add on that?
Look, I don't know if anyone watched 360 tonight, but James Graham kind of stole my thunder here. What's the difference between grounding the ball from a grubber kick with one hand and grounding the ball the way Appy did? It's not a golf ball. It's a rugby league ball. And especially if Appy's left arm's tied up, how's he going to re-grip the ball? Like, he doesn't have hands like, you know, Sonny Bill Williams. Like, it's just ridiculously hard to re-grip that ball. And look, he did lose the ball forward, but in my opinion, he gets the ball back in his hand. Does he have to, like, lodge a DA application to the referee's board to ask if it's held again or not? Like, come on, man, it's a game of rugby league. Are we playing it in slow motion or are we playing it in normal speed? You look at that shot from the eastern end and it looks like no try. You look at it from the western end and it looks like a clear try. I like Aaron said, you've got to go with the on-field decision. But the bottom line is, I think we're, you know, if you're trying to be objective, sure, he lost a little bit of the ball for a sec, but then he gets his hand back on top of the ball. To me, that's control, and he's grounded it. I don't know what else we're looking for, but it seems to be, you know, again, I'm being probably a little bit biased here with being a West Tiger, but we want to try and make the rules black and white, yet we seem to cop it when it's black and white, and we seem to cop it when it's discretionary. And I've got more to say when you get to the first try. I'll save it for that, Josh. But, like, we're just getting ripped off on every possible thing that goes on. Now, the difference between what happened last week against Penrith and what happened this week, look, it certainly changes the momentum of the game, all these bad decisions. I think eventually we might have lost to Brisbane, but we had the chance of beating Brisbane taken away from us. Like, where last week I really felt like if we were on top of, you know, Penrith 12-0, I still reckon we go on with it and win the game. So just very disappointing that it just seems to happen every week. And there's nothing we can do about it. And the air went out of the crowd in that no try. Like, I mean, I just put the 6 points in the bank. Like, that was right next to the post. I thought he's going to kick the goal. And I'm celebrating, high-fiving with supporters around us. And then all I hear is, "Dad, it's no try." I'm like, "What?" And I'm like, "How? What's going on?" Contact someone, and, you know, texting relatives, and they're all saying it was a try. The commentators, you know, finding it hard to believe it's not a try. And then post-game, you're hearing everyone saying it's a try. What's going on? I've heard tonight on 360, you know, that was their turning point of the round, the Appy Coruscant no try. And then, you know, they're all saying it was an absolute blunder. Like, what are we doing? Look, I don't want, you know, the other 16 supporter bases to say, you know, Westlife podcasts are just bloody whingers and they're always having to go at the referees. But, guys, we can look back every week at getting howlers. That the no sin bin last week of Schneider, the game against the Dolphins when Appy not only didn't get a penalty, but we got penalised, and that turned the momentum when we should have had a penalty 10 metres inside the Dolphins' half. We got absolutely hammered against Parramatta, but luckily we got away with that game. We just don't seem to be on the right end of decisions, and it happened all night the other night to a really good team. I get that, but you can't beat a bigger, faster, superior team when you're not getting the rub of the green from the officials as well. So it's just very disappointing, and I know the club are upset with it, and I know we were even complaining about it as a club after the win against Parramatta. But all our complaints are falling on deaf ears. It's got to be frustrating for the boys. It's got to be frustrating for the coaches. We do enough stupid things of our own accord on the field without needing this. But I think the one thing that really sticks out from what Aaron's saying is it went up a try, guys. If it goes up a try, you cannot say Appy didn't get the ball back in his hand again, like, unless you want him to squash it and think it's a coconut or something. Like, I don't know what Appy's meant to do there. I don't. That's mind-boggling.
Craig on the YouTube says, unless you're Kawhi Leonard, no one has true grip of the ball when slamming it down. Look, as someone who has pretty very small hands for a man, I'm going to be on the side of, yeah, that's not fair on us who can't grip a full-size footy. And I guess Appy, I haven't shaken hands or inspected Appy's hands. But look, jokes aside, I'll run with similar to what you guys said as well. So it's all about the re-grip for me. So the rule that he pointed to was the same one I was using as an argument on Twitter as it happened. And it's the re-grip thing. How can he re-grips the ball? I think he actually does get the ball back in his grip. And do you have to go to a dictionary and have semantics of what grip means? Because is grip what he has his hand over the ball in control of it? Can you 100% say he doesn't have grip? And it's always goes down to the benefit of doubt. As you guys have both said, it went up a try, and it should always be benefit of doubt. Do you have enough to overrule the ruling? He has his hand fully in control and has a back against his wrist to the point that he's able to kind of curl his wrist down and slam it down like he's doing a slam dunk with a basketball.
With control.
So how can you rightfully say straight away, I have the audio for the bunker itself. So here is the conversation of the bunker itself. So this is what went on after the try when they're analysing it.
Three. Over.
Tackle four.
When you're ready.
Yep.
Two cuts. Good.
Camera two. I'll go to seven now.
Sees his entire the stand there. That's fine. And reaches out. And just something.
You can shoot from nine. Just side on.
Nice and slow. Oh, we'll go back on that.
Yep. And go back to seven as well.
Yeah, go back as he's coming down.
Still got his thumb on there, just coffee or...
Real slow on that one.
Yeah.
To me, that boy. Have you got something from the other side to see if the, it looks like it comes away from the hand and he catches back up to it? He's going to have to send this up. Director, can you put the referee on the screen, please?
Happy with this angle, Goffy?
Yeah, that's going to be the one.
Okay.
Looking for a grounding, mate. Yeah, nice and slow here.
Okay, I'll play through at 10% when we're on. Okay, we're on now. Playing through.
When the gap's there, mate.
Yeah.
Yeah, just go back with the gap.
There you go.
Keep going.
Yep.
Frame back.
Happy with that.
At this point, the ball has come away from the hand. Play through.
Yep.
Which then catches back up, and he doesn't regain possession. This is a knock-on. We have a decision.
So one thing picked up in that audio, too, is one guy in the background who's not on the mic, he says has he got his thumb
on the ball,
still on it. So if the two guys in the bunker can't agree on it, again, what I said, if there's reasonable doubt, if there's two people can't decide on it, then you don't have enough evidence or enough confidence to overrule it. As anything to add on that audio?
Yeah, the thing that gets me listening to that audio, because this is the first time I've heard it, it's the part where they're like, play it real slow. We're at the point now where we're examining everything with a fine-tooth comb, trying to find little itty-bitty reasons to take tries away from teams, especially when they've, like I said before, especially when they've already been awarded on the field. I remember back in the days of the video ref before it became the bunker, so what, early to mid-2010s, where there'd always be, like, when it's spinning on screen and if it came up as a try or a no try, sometimes there'd be a little benefit of the doubt written underneath it. Why have we gone away from that? Why have we gone away from saying we can't 100% determine whether or not ball hasn't been regripped or regathered and just leave it at that? Normally, like, we see it almost every game now. Most of the time when they go back to the referee on field, they're going to take it off the team. There's only been a few instances where they've gone back to the referee on field and they've kept the on-field ruling. And I just don't understand why. Also, and why we're more often than not on the wrong end of it.
Rob?
Oh, look, what did they say there? I don't even remember exactly. Let's go to camera 2 of 9 or whatever it is. So the other 8 angles are happy with a try. It's gone up as a try, but one camera shows that it probably isn't a try to them. So let's go no try. Look, I go back to the kicking thing, guys. If you ground a ball from a kick with one hand, you don't have super glue on your hands. There's going to be a little bit of separation as you ground the ball. If we're allowing tries off kicks with you know, like reasonable control, Appy had reasonable control. It's a try, but you know, it's us. So it wasn't a try, and we just move on, and we just cop the loss, and we say the boys tried for 80 minutes, and we end up losing 34-10. Made no difference in the end, but I mean, it does make a difference. It makes a bit of a difference. Not just that, we were down a man at that stage too. Like we would have, you know, leveled up the Broncos try that they scored while we had a player in the sin bin. So it's just a huge momentum killer, and you can see what momentum does because you can see how we came out after half time. That try in half time killed us. Like we put in a really good first half, and then you could see the energy was totally different in the first 15 minutes of the second half. So it obviously has an effect, but I keep saying this. Refs will make mistakes on the run, but you know, when you've got the aid of video and you, and in my opinion, you still get it wrong, you know, it's just, it's an issue. And you know, I don't know if people watch other games, but I saw two blatant forward passes the other day. Not only were they forward passes, the ref is right in line. And in my opinion, he knows those passes are forward and he doesn't want to call it. Like, it's just getting to be a joke now. But I know if those passes come from one of our boys, it's a forward pass.
100%. Maybe they can get the help from our friends at Mobile Corp and help with their technology. Maybe they can get an ultra, super, extra high definition channel so they can see more tries, take more tries off. Is what I'm trying to say. Mobile Corp, they support local businesses by managing their IT, their networks, and their mobile devices. If you're a local business owner looking for a partner who will take away the hassle of dealing with IT issues, make sure you have cybersecurity in place. Maybe we can hack into the bunker to bring their system down next game. Handle all your mobile device needs and Mobile Corp can help. Mobile Corp is a family-run business and long-time supporter of the West Tigers. Reach out to Stephen and his team at Mobile Corp. Check out mobilecorp.com.au. That's mobilecorp.com.au. Or we have a link to their website as well at westtigers.com.au in our link tree links. Righto, we'll move on to a bit of other news and we'll get to the good news to come out of the last few days since we last went to air, and that of course is the signing of Tarua from the Panthers, Api Korosau's first cousin. Rob, I'll let you go first on this one. Nice little handy pickup in the outside backs.
Look, very surprising considering it seemed like it was either St George or Penrith that were going to get the deal done. Look, for me, he covers, you know, fullback, wing, centre. So it's not just the fact that he's an out-and-out winger. Not my prototype sort of outside back that I'd like. I'd sort of like a big, tall, sort of fast athlete. But, you know, the guy's obviously in good try-scoring form. He can play. He can play a few positions. And I think we're getting him at a reasonable price considering he does cover so many positions. So, and obviously the best part about it was pretty much kept quiet until Michael Shamus, I think, broke it on Thursday and said that we've got him, and it was made official Friday afternoon with the members' email.
As?
Yeah, I was really excited about this one. We've obviously had a bit of a weakness in our backs for the last few years, and obviously losing Junior Tupou, I think Taruva's probably more likely to play centre, but it's a very, very good pickup for our back line. If we have Ollum and Tarua as our two centres, I'm pretty satisfied with that. I think that's a really good thing there. Plus, he's got the combination with Appy and with Luai. There's a chance of a chance of a Panthers edge down that side, or ex-Panthers edge down that side, which I find really exciting for, what's the word I'm thinking of? Combinations.
Righto, speaking of combinations, this guy in the West Tigers for another few years, Shane Richardson signs a long-term deal. He said no to the Gladiator, Russell Crowe. Rob, how good is this? In Richo, we trust.
Look, everyone's got different opinions on Richo. For me, it's probably the best signing we've made in our club's history, player or administrator. I think he's going to not only, he's doing great things short-term, but he's really looking at our long-term future. There's going to be things that all of us don't agree with what Shane will do at times. But the one thing I know with confidence is every decision he makes is for the benefit of the West Tigers, and there's no personal self-interest there. So whether it be home grounds or whatever the case may be, he's never going to please anyone, but I know he's going to do what's best for the club. I think he's been a godsend. And look, obviously, we're going to see over the next few years whether all this hype comes to fruition. But the thing that gives me confidence, guys, he's done it at multiple NRL clubs. He's done it overseas in the English Super League. He knows how to get clubs from the bottom to the top. In my opinion, he's taking a lot of pressure off Benji and the playing group. He seems to be doing a lot of the stuff that Benji doesn't have to worry about too much. Obviously, they consult. I just think it's a great signing, guys. That there was not like that. Nothing made me happier than what I heard on Friday. The Tarua news was nothing. Once I heard about Richo, I felt absolute relief. That wasn't ecstasy. It was just relief, because obviously this 4-year deal starts from July the 2nd. So it's a long-term deal, and I just know he's going to do all the right things. So, you know, agree or not agree, I'm very happy with it personally.
As we'll integrate the home ground argument into this discussion, so the rumour going around is that Leichhardt will probably only get one, Campbelltown one or two, and the rest will go to a big stadium. What are your thoughts on that one? Do you have a prediction and a preferred destination as our major home ground?
I sure do, but before I get into that, just a little bit of a shout out to you, Josh. You're absolutely killing it with these segues and transitions from one topic to another or into a sponsorship, so nicely done to you. But yeah, I can understand why we're probably going down this path. Doesn't mean I feel like it's obviously not going to make everyone happy, but I feel like what we will go with will be the Accor option. For one, it's a bigger stadium. A couple of other teams use it as a home ground. He's already said that we're not going to go to CommBank because that's Parramatta's turf. I think he said that on one of his appearances on the Behind the Raw podcast at the club.
Oh, I thought it was James Graham's. Yeah, yeah, you might be right.
He said that, but yeah, I think the Accor option is probably the one we'll go with. I don't think we'll go with the Sydney Football Stadium. It doesn't feel like that's in or near our territory. That is pretty much like Roosters, Swans territory over there. Some of those other like more Eastern clubs. We're definitely not an Eastern club. So I think it'll most likely be Accor because we've been there in the past. I hope it's Accor personally, if we do have to go to one of the biggest stadiums, because I remember my membership seat was my first seat. And I really, really liked it. So I hope I get the opportunity to get that one back personally.
The SFS, we had as a home ground last time we made the finals in 10-11. We played part of our home games. Benji's last home game before he came back was against South at the SFS as well. I hope it's a court. Look, I was at CommBank Stadium on Saturday to watch the girls, which we'll talk about their grand finals later in the show. But CommBank Stadium as a stadium is by far the best to watch footy at compared... Well, I haven't been to the SFS. I can't attest to that. But compared to Accor, but yeah, the Parramatta factor for me, and look, maybe I'm a little bit biased because I hate every single thing about that franchise. Just the disdain I have for the Parramatta Eels is as high as anyone in footy fandom. But yeah, and maybe it is the 2009 Easter smacking. Maybe that's kind of coming around. But yeah, playing the Eels at their home ground in our home game as well doesn't make sense. As you said, as Easter, a core should always be where Easter is played. And I don't care if that has to be our home ground. So yeah, I hope it's a core, if any. And you kind of touched on it as to back in the day, we used to get reciprocal memberships. So I think back then the Dragons were playing there, the Dogs, Rabbitohs.
Parramatta as well, because they had their stadium.
Yeah.
CommBank was being built at the time, and the Rabbits.
So basically the season tickets gave you 12, it was more than, it was 12 games plus a couple of Leichhardt Campbelltown. So you ended up getting like 14 games on your season tickets, and it was really affordable. So if he can go to a core and look with the cost of living, I really hope that the season tickets are a really, really good price. Like basically kids should be nothing. Like family memberships should be cheap as shit, because I mean, it's going to cost them $50 to buy food for everyone. Beers are bloody $11 for a mid-strength and everything. I really hope that the membership for a season ticket there, if we're going to cop the less, what's the word I'm looking for? The less historic and soulful stadiums, then at least give us something that's more affordable. And I guess Homebush, at least you got the train station. I mean, Campbelltown's got the train station too, but Lidcombe is kind of like the center, I guess, of Sydney geographically. It's kind of easy to get from most places in Sydney. It's straight off the M4 as well. So, I mean, we're all biased because we all live within a couple of golf ball swings of a core stadium. But yeah, I hope it's a core. What about you, Rob?
Guys, again, this is something that Shane Richardson is doing for the benefit of the West Tigers. Personally, I'm not a fan of Acor. I hate it. It's 5 minutes from my place. We've sold out Leichhardt. We've sold out Campbelltown twice. Like, so we've had three suburban home games and three sold out stadiums. So I would put up with Acor or anywhere, to be honest, for that matter, provided there's a long-term plan. Now, let's just give Richo and whoever ends up trying to help him with this a bit of time. We've got to try and get government funding, whether we're going to redevelop Campbelltown, Leichhardt, or both. So I would like to know what the long-term strategy is. If Acor is a long-term strategy, I'm not a fan of it, but I'm a West Tigers member and supporter, and I know he's doing the right thing, but there's times that Richo's going to be doing the right things and we're all not going to be happy. So you just got to suck it up and go with whatever he's doing. But I'm just being selfish. I don't like the ground. I feel I like being snugged in tight, you know, with the rest of the supporters and cheering and all that. And I just don't find there's much of an atmosphere there unless there's 50 or 60,000 people there, which we're not going to get at most home and away games. But look, Richo's doing whatever we got to do to make us genuinely financially viable, not like the buffoons we had there before him that would, you know, say, wouldn't lie, but they would say we actually had 20,000 members when we actually had 7,000 paying members. So Richo's being very transparent with what he's doing. So I get all that. I support all that. But yeah, I'm not going to lie and say I'm happy about it, but you know, I'll put up with whatever we put up with, but I'd love to see what the long-term strategy is, because we've just set up offices in the MacArthur area, and it kind of seems a bit weird, unless it's by force, that we set up offices there and we're going to take away some of the home games from Campbelltown there this year. So he's got a real juggling act, guys. And the one thing I will say for Shane Richardson is, if this whole home ground conundrum was easily solvable, it would have been solved in the last 25 years. So he's just got a ridiculous job of trying to sort out whatever it is. But right now, he's made it very clear that Leichhardt, Campbelltown, certain grounds don't have the corporate facilities, and it's costing us a lot of money, where unfortunately grounds like CommBank, Acor, whatever SFS is called now, Allianz, those places can cater for that corporate dollar and doesn't suit, you know, me or you or Joe Blow, who doesn't, you know, isn't paying a corporate dollar. But he's got to do what's best for the club and its future. So I'll support whatever he does, even if I don't like it. You know, it's just got to be what it's got to be.
Yeah, what I hope with the core is, I hope they put a lot of effort into, because they got the money straight up, I believe, with a core. It's guaranteed money. So I hope they put a bit of money into a bit more game day activation sort of stuff. So outside the stadium, there's so much room there. You've got Caffey Freeman Park. Like, when the State of Origin, and obviously State of Origin is always going to be much bigger and, obviously more people going to watch it, apart from maybe, I mean, even Easter can't. You get 82,000 people for Origins. So it's not going to be quite Origin level, but for some of the derbies, I mean, use Caffey Freeman Park and get some food trucks, get the street closed off. I know the brewery and locker room are right there. Like, can we get, I know the brewery, they block off the street and they open up bars, like, and that sort of thing. Can we get a bit of a festival sort of atmosphere for the derbies? When we play South, the Dogs, who's the other home ground? Like the big grounds, make it a big day, jumping castle, stuff for kids, like make it into like a real festival sort of event that people really want to go to. Make tickets cheap and then sell money to charge rent. Look, I'm speaking on my arse here. I got no idea about event management and how to make money off these things. But following American sports, and if anyone's ever been to an American sporting event, you got the tailgating out the front. Like, make going to the footy worth every dollar that the family is paying. If they're going to fork out $100, $200 by the time you buy food and transport and parking and all that bullshit. Make it worth it. Make it a full day out at the footy, not just come in, eat your hot dog, watch 80 minutes of footy and go home. So
at a minimum, they've got to put the New South Wales Cup game on there. And you know, I'm not going to upset, I'm going to upset some people. I don't care if you want to call them the Magpies, the Budgerigars or the Tigers or whatever. Just put the New South Wales Cup on before the game. Give us two or three games to watch. For example, I got to go out to Campbelltown. I got to see the New South Wales Cup. I got to see guys that I thought, you know what, that guy is a fringe first grader, and I got to see this bloke, and he's not a first grader right now. I don't get to see that when I go to a first grade game normally, because it's being played at bloody Lidcombe Oval or to keep 1,500 dinosaurs happy or other people happy. Like, put your reserve grade on in front of the first grade. So, A, we're getting value for money, and B, we get to see what the rest of the first grade squad looks like. So I don't think it's too hard, but you make ACOR an isolated first grade game with no football whatsoever prior to it. How are you going to generate an atmosphere? Like, if the game's a kickoff at 5:30 and there's nothing on before it, what are we supposed to do? Just get there at 5 o'clock and, you know, like we're waiting for
it. Well, that's what I'm saying. You could do stuff outside the stadium. The purists like us will want to go in and watch, obviously, as many games of football as possible. But if you can have stuff outside, like American sports, the lower grade stuff isn't in American. Like, there's no pregame usually for American sports, and they pack obviously different category. Like one city, one team. It's comparing apples and peaches, really. But I think they'll keep playing. I mean, the girls are going to start as the NRLW. Obviously, maybe the NRLW can, as that expands to more games as well, like that season, more teams coming in. If the NRLW is before it too, like that'll help too. So, look, just I'm sure right now at Concord they're thinking of all these things. They don't need our help. So, we kind of talked about the home ground. I've got this one in. Old mate Buzz talking about possibly an audit of West Tigers administration. Rob, I mean, do we give this guy, how much airtime do we give this guy with this story?
Maybe 10 seconds. It's
10 seconds.
It's just rubbish. I mean, if there's going to be an audit, it should be on the previous management. This guy just doesn't like Shane Richardson. I don't know what his beef is with him. He worries about the conflict of interest between Shane Richardson's management company that his son runs and how there's a conflict there. Yet, he didn't care two hoots about Lee Hadjipantelis being the major sponsor and being the chairman of the club and the massive conflict of interest that was, not only there, but the fact that he sponsors other clubs as well. So I just think this guy is really going after Shane Richardson, a lot like how he's gone after Phil Gould in the past and bashing Canterbury for whatever move they do. So I just wouldn't give it 2 seconds. The people that are bitching about Shane Richardson, they should be like going to Concord every morning and getting on their knees and bowing to him for what he's going to do for this club, that not be bagging him. So, you know, again, the bloke follows a peptide club. So I think the less we talk about him, the better.
That was about 40 seconds, but it was a good 40 seconds. Right, let's get back to the game itself, try by try. Look, unfortunately, we have to start with the opposition because they scored first, and I'll get your opinion on it.
Madden, they come right again. Mariner this time, there's no holes in the bag. Has he scored in the corner?
As I was watching, you guys were at the ground, I was watching it on TV. I was hoping with all hell that the ball would be put on the line, but yeah, I mean, a great finish by the Broncos winger there. And I mean, in hindsight, backing the right winger for the Broncos for the first try would have been pretty smart. But what are your thoughts on this one?
I mean, I think we did all right to spread that far, to attempt to get there to save the try. But the Broncos, they have a really strong back line and a lot of really good finishes. And after an early mistake from our fullback and a knock-on after the fact, it was all just too easy for them.
Rob, anything to add before we go to the next one?
Yeah, this will be a little bombshell for you, Josh. It's a clear no try. But again, it's whether it's discretionary or black and white, the West Tigers cop the bad end of it. And for anyone thinking about the grounding, I don't know, the ball might have got grounded on the line before the corner post. If it did hit the corner post simultaneously, it's no try. But no one on earth seems to want to mention that Jock Madden caught the ball on Patrick Carrigan's inside shoulder. But I guarantee you guys, if that was the West Tigers, it comes back up as no try. Not only does he catch it inside the left shoulder, he catches it a metre to the left of Patrick Carrigan's left shoulder. So you go back to games like, who was it when, was it Parramatta and, no, it was Penrith and the Roosters the other week, where they found an obstruction on Dylan Edwards 30 or 40 metres away, but they don't want to go back to this clear catch from Madden inside the shoulder, runs behind his player, made no difference to the try, but you're not allowed to do it. Okay. Now, if I want to go back a long time before Aaron went back to the, you know, the Burgess try with the Brooks incident in 2021, I can go back to like somewhere around 2015 when I think it might have been Robbie Farrer or someone running behind Keith Galloway. It made no difference on the play, but he got called back for running behind his own player. It's a clear no try, guys. It's not even close. He's caught the ball on the inside shoulder, no try, penalty to the Tigers, 10 metres out. It would have been the second bullet we dodged because we'd already dodged the first bullet from Buller not being able to catch a high ball and Mariner, you know, tripping over his nuts for the first time and losing the ball. So just really disappointed. It should have been a penalty to us, but no one seems to want to mention it.
I've got another one. Just on that, Rob, I've got another one for you of a similar sort of incident. 2017 at Leichhardt versus the Sharks. Tedesco scores a try, but it's called back because Aaron Woods has his hand on Paul Gallen's chest and Gallen does the biggest diving act of all time and falls backwards and it's taken off us.
Oh, Aaron, I think it was one under the Madge era up in North. It might have been during COVID. Remember when we played North Queensland and something happened from the scrum? Someone might have pulled someone by the jersey or not packed squarely. I mean, look, it was just one of those.
Oh, that was against the Sharks.
Was it the Sharks? Yeah, okay. Whoever it was, it's like, no one else will get penalised for that, Aaron, except us. We are just the kings of getting effed over by officialdom, and it's just overbearing, guys. But that first try was a clear no try. Anyone who, I mean, obviously we're not allowed to play the tape because, you know, the YouTube will pull us down if we play NRL video, but go home, watch the replay, tell me he doesn't catch it a meter left of Pat Carrigan's shoulder who's running a decoy.
I might be biased. Well, I definitely am biased, but did it feel like you guys were watching on TV? Watching it on TV, I hate watching it on TV, by the way. I was screaming at my dad told me to calm down. I was screaming at the TV in the middle of the pub. It's better screaming knowing people can hear your voice. So, yeah, get out to the game if you can. Next home game, which isn't for another 7 weeks. Anyway, back to my point. Totally lost my train of thought. What were we talking about?
Talking about watching the game with your dad. When
the try is confirmed, it seems like the Broncos, it was confirmed within about 15 seconds. And someone said in our comments earlier, they're like, they don't even celebrate now. You got to wait for that try confirmed thing. Whereas the Broncos, I was like, oh, like you kind of sit there waiting. I swear the Broncos, like 12 seconds later, try confirm, like didn't even get to the replay before they even confirmed it. Anyways, I'm probably just being biased. Right, not long after the first try, this happened.
No, not the bomb. In fact, he should have done the bomb. He bombed out with a kick. That could be Simbin on. No.
As Samuel Fainu got the rule that if you catch the ball in the in goals, it's an automatic mark and a tap. It was a beautiful round the ankles tackle, nonetheless.
Yeah, it was a really strong tackle. All credit to Sam for the tackle there, but I don't know. This is one of those ones where I know he's young and inexperienced, but did he know that it was a seven tackle set? I mean, he probably, or did he not know about the? I don't know. It's a really strange one.
I think he knew the rule. I think he just probably
it was a brain explosion.
Yeah. It's, I don't know. Did the referee blow the whistle? I actually didn't check that.
I think he did.
So you can't really complain too much about this, Rob.
It's another awful kick from Aiden Caesar. He's gone totally off the boil the last couple of weeks. Some of the things he did in the first half were just mind-boggling. We had the Brisbane right winger, Dean Mariner, who, like I said, he couldn't catch a cold. He bombed the try before he scored his first try. He bombed just a normal Aiden Caesar kick. When I think Aiden Caesar put up a kick towards him, he just dropped a cold, which gave us good field position. And we're on the right side of the field. We've got junior Ken Mamalo on the left wing playing on our team. We've got a bloke who can't catch a cold. And we're putting these little under seven freaking bombs up to Corey Oates, who's as safe as a bank, or Reece Walsh. Like, it was absolutely stupid play from Aiden Caesar. And that's the second time, like he did it 2 weeks ago against St. George, which ended up costing David Clemmer a couple of $1,000 because, he got put on report from a quick tap as well, trying to stop that. It throws your team under so much pressure when you execute so poorly like that. So, you know, that's just an absolute howler from Caesar, and he just can't keep doing it.
Yeah, it wasn't like it was just on the line. Like, he landed halfway between the try line and the dead ball line. It was
similar kick earlier in the first half, Josh, where I think Galvin jumped up for the ball and knocked the ball on. But like this one, you could tell it just came off the inside of his left foot and it was just nowhere near the try line. And it was just awful. Like, obviously, Fainu shouldn't have done that. Fainu had a couple of brain explosions that day as well. But, I mean, I get what Aaron's trying to say. Maybe he was trying to play dumb because Walsh looked like he was playing on. Like, he didn't make it look like he was coming back for a seven tackle. He looked like he was, you know, just trying to beat the tackle. So, look, again, I mean, did Walsh have to run towards Fainu? Like, he's caught the ball on the left side of the post. Why did he run towards Fainu, who's on the other side of the post? There's a straighter line to get back to the 20-metre line. So I think Walsh definitely took advantage of it and thought, you know, who can I go to that would do something stupid to me?
All right, not long after that happened, this happened.
Reynolds is on the left. He's with it. He kicks for Walsh. He's sprinting through. Waller's got it back. Don't worry about those two. Jock Madden has snuck through to steal the headline.
As, look, a man down, obviously, you expect a try, but a kick through the middle, you can't really excuse that for having only 12 men. It was, very, very soft. Look, credit to the Broncos, a very well set up try.
The one thing you can't do when Adam Reynolds is on the field is have your fullback in the defensive line, because he's going to spot that immediately and take advantage of it, because that's just the sort of eyes up footy that is one of his strongest suits. Buller had a bit of a rough day. Don't know why he was in the defensive line at that point, because the tackle before, he was at the back, and then next second he's completely gone. And yeah, well done by Adam Reynolds to spot that. Great try to Jock. He would have enjoyed scoring a try against his former club.
And on the stroke of halftime, this happened. Well, obviously, it was in between these tries, the Appy thing, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. Yeah. But Josh, I just want to say on that Jock Madden try, I don't know if it's done by coaching or not, but why was Jareem Buller standing up in the line? Like, he's a fullback, it's the last tackle. Like, are they coached to actually stand in the line, in the front line, when there's 12 men? I don't know. Like, if he's under instructions, you can forgive him. But why he's not behind the line 10 metres and defusing a simple nothing kick, that's just good recognition by Reynolds. But again, it's just, I think, poor play from Buller, who he did have a couple of really good moments, but overall he had a shocker.
So on the stroke of halftime, this happened.
Finish it, Brisbane. There's Broncos everywhere. Walsh has with it.
Oh, wow.
Here they go. What a try to finish the first half.
Now, I didn't notice it watching it. It was only until later on when reading on Twitter, people talking underneath the NRL posting this as a highlight, but the pass back inside does appear to go forward as.
Yeah, I thought it did. I was actually walking down the stairs from the top of the grandstand to get down to the bottom at that point, and I saw this right in front of me. Basically, from the angle I was at, the pass was definitely thrown forward, and it was definitely caught from in front of that point as well. It was just one of those really unfortunate ones where, like you said earlier, Josh, and this was my argument to some people on Saturday evening on Twitter as well, it's sliding doors moment. Like, we had a chance to, at that point, be 10-6 down. And if, let's just say for the sake of it, that that play still happens right on halftime. Going into halftime, 16-6 down, or 18-6 down, or whatever it was, is a lot better of a position to be in than going 16-0, because you don't have confidence, you don't have momentum, you don't really have much of anything going for you. And from that point, I was just really deflated. Like, I thought we'd come back out at halftime, maybe have a good crack at it, which we, to be fair, we did. But as a fan, yeah, just extremely deflating seeing that right on halftime. One of our issues has always been conceding tries in the last 5 minutes or conceding tries in the last minute of a half. And it happened again. And yeah, the Broncos once again had all the momentum going into the second half.
Look, you mentioned sliding doors moment there. If it was 10-6, they might not have attempted this kick. They might have just wanted to take it in at halftime, not try and risk it. I don't know. That's how sliding doors moments work. You just will never know. So,
yeah, but don't forget, we had the ball. We had the ball there, like, with 30 seconds left. And on the last tackle, you know, instead of us kicking it downfield, because we were down 10-0, we tried to run it on the last tackle out to our right. And obviously, like, the pass, I think, got deflected off Naden into Charlie Staines, and it was a knock-on, and they played the ball. But that's poor recognition by our team, because Adam Reynolds had done a cross kick earlier in the half along the ground, mind you, a grubber kick that was just a little bit too strong and went over the sideline. But he'd fired a warning shot, and he showed us what he was going to do. And, like, with 15 seconds left, how else are the Broncos going to score? And obviously, they took advantage of an inexperienced winger who was standing 20 metres in field, and they had it all worked out, guys. They outthought us, they outplayed us, but it was poor recognition by our guys, given the fact that they tried that sort of same play 15 minutes earlier.
Righto, so in the second half, we needed to be first to score, but this happened.
Sorry, last Josh, tackle, just before Brisbane. You move on.
Yep.
Shane's just posted in the YouTube comments there that we had 70% of the ball in the first half. And I didn't actually know that we had that much ball in the first half. The problem with that was, once again, the Broncos repeatedly, I think it was like 4 or 5 set restarts and or penalties in a row. And no players went to the bin for what were some obvious, very blatant professional fouls. I don't think they even got a warning until after 5 or 6, and normally it only takes 3 or 4. And like that was also going to take a lot out of our team and frustrate them. And that was obviously the Broncos' plan. Like, they came into that period of the game with a real plan to lay on us in the ruck and see what they could get away with. And they got away with a lot, and it really just stifled the rest of our attacking chances in the first half.
They probably saw Penrith through it last week and get away with it.
Before you play that tape, in my opinion, their whole game plan was to attack Justin Ollam. Okay, they kept working the ball to the left, and Justin Ollam adjusted to this in the second half. But in the first half, he kept jamming in. It was so easy for the Broncos to create an overlap, and they played on that all first half. They tried to do it in the second half, and you noticed our new winger in particular just hanging out a little bit more and not getting following Justin in all the time. So it was a clear plan of the Broncos to attack our left, just like we attacked out their left. I know, like, we did some stupid errors, the Buller thing, the Samuel Afenu thing, etc. But I really thought in the first half, our attack looked really good. And I know we don't score often in the red zone. There was a lot more shifting of the ball. We were getting outside the Broncos. Charlie Staines might have scored if he didn't have Jesse Arthurs come and take a cover tackle off him. We got outside them on the other side as well with our new winger. There were some good movements there. Buller made some nice passes. Naden got in the clear a couple of times. There were some good offloads. The style of footy we played was really good, but we just made some dumb errors, some dumb penalties, whether it be a leg pull, whether it be a push in the back. We just did so many stupid things. A sin bin, you know, Jareem Buller dropping balls that he shouldn't be dropping or standing up in the line. We got beaten on fundamentals. We did not get beaten by a style of play. You know, we played a good brand of footy. The problem is it's not showing on the scoreboard, but I can see improvement in our attack, at least in the first half. And I definitely saw it in the last 10 minutes when we started playing jungle ball, because we were down 34-0 and the boys were playing absolute Harlem Globetrotter footy. And like that last try that Stain scored is just miraculous. Like, there are a zillion passes in that. But there is better attack. We're just not seeing any rewards from it. That's just my opinion. Some might disagree, but I actually am seeing, I'm liking the style, you know, from the very first set, guys. Literally the first set, we had Steph offload the ball. We did a backline out to the right. We weren't doing the five hit-ups and the kick bullshit. It was a real style of footy, but we're just not getting over that try line, guys. And you know, I mean, Appy did, but it was ruled no try. But we are showing some signs of improvement. Maybe I'm clutching, guys, but
I think Benji took the shackles off for sure.
I feel like Benji's kind of said, guys, just go up the middle a bit more in the second half and tighten it up. But it really didn't suit us the first 15 minutes because we kind of went away from what we did in the first half. But anyway, you're going to get to that now with these second half tries.
Look, the real test. Why can we just skip? We'll skip the Broncos tries. We'll go straight to the Charlie tries. But sorry, go Az.
The real test of what Rob was saying just then is if we go into the Bulldogs game this weekend with the same sort of style of football, because the Broncos the Bulldogs don't defend as well as the Broncos. So if that style of footy can work, this weekend coming could be a real interesting test of that.
It's going to piss down with rain, but though apparently, but we'll preview that game Wednesday night. Just realize there's a ton of you on the YouTube stream at the moment. Please, if you haven't already, give us a like. Just help us with the algorithm. So even after the show's finished, it helps get into more people's feeds and get more eyes on the show. Help support the show. Give us a click. I think take a second. Let's go to Charlie's first try.
Dalvin, little chance. He'll take him on. And offload. Take it on the toe. Play on and try. Stays in the corner. Pull the hands back. Dalvin shows us his talents again. Staines has his first try for the year. And only his fourth as a Tiger.
As Rob said, a lot of glimpses in the last part of this game. Finally getting, look, the Broncos might have put the tools down a little bit. But, Lockie Galvin, a big hand in these as well.
Yeah, for sure. I think the fact that this game didn't blow out like it could have, and we did hang in there, we stayed in the grind, we didn't concede 50, and we did manage to score a couple of late tries, really shows the direction the team is moving in. Obviously, we probably would have liked to have seen it a little bit more, especially earlier in the game, but the connection down that side there, I was keeping a bit of a close eye on Galvin all game, or as much as I could. And I really enjoyed watching the way he sort of led the team around. And obviously we've got to give him better ball and we've got to give him better opportunities to do his thing, but he's absolutely capable, and credit to Staines, that one in particular, really, really good put down, really, really good try.
Shane Colt sent us $5 to say jungle ball. That's brilliant, Rob. That description's worth a fiver for sure. So that little...
Even that try we're just talking about now, like, let's be fair. Galvin premeditated that. He showed amazing strength to get through two tacklers, but it was a low pass. And, like, if Charlie tries to catch that, he's knocking that on or the ball's going into touch. It was really quick thinking by Charlie Staines to put it on the foot, get the bounce, do the step. Like, it was a brilliant finish from Charlie Staines. Like, Charlie made one mistake all game, and the only mistake he made was when Jareem Buller dropped the ball and he tried to clean it up and didn't clean it up straight away. And luckily, Dean Mariner bombed a try from the very next set, and we got away with it. Other than that, Charlie Staines did everything that could be asked of him, and he's been just copying a heap of criticism for nothing, in my opinion, the last few weeks, because, you know, people notice that, oh, he wasn't standing outside Naden against Penrith and it could have been a try. Like, people just look at the big moments. They do not look at how great his catching was all game, how he caught AFL kicks downfield over his head, the passes he was doing that were hitting everyone on the chest. He played a really good game, guys, but I just think that was more Charlie Staines' try than Lockie's, because Lockie's pass was going to ground and heading over the sideline.
Yep. And then the Harlem Globetrotter try to finish.
got the music in the background for
no.
Double, triple juggle. They've got quadruple juggle. And play on. Out to Bateman. Hasn't got a kick in him. Back and comes for Clemmer.
He does.
And oh. Really, does he? Breaking news. Then Galvin passes back. Unusual play. Buller, yeah, still the last tackle. It started 3 minutes ago. Now Naden with the ball. He's got a kick. New beauty. And it bounces up for Staines. Oh. To try. It's a set play.
As I love that Vossi was on the call for this one again. It's just look, by this stage, it was so late in the game. I wish I was so angry about the result and not being at the ground. Maybe if I was at the ground, I would have appreciated this one more. But looking back as a highlight in itself, it was one of the better West Tigers tries we've seen. It's almost like Arcee. I always say the Raiders usually score Arcee tries like this. Finally, we get one, albeit when the game's out of reach.
Yeah, I didn't really see much of that try because I was trying to focus on walking down the stairs at the time. Again,
oh, early lever.
I try not to, but I just felt so deflated that I didn't see it. I didn't really celebrate it, and I was just feeling really flat as I was trying to leave. I get emotional at football games sometimes, and that can sometimes be a good thing, sometimes a bad thing. And I just got really disheartened and really down on the way out of this one. But I've watched that try since, and I don't know, could you describe it as organized chaos? Because that seems to me what it was. And it was an absolute beauty of a bounce from Naden's little punt up into the air there. I thought it was a really, really good piece of play and great reaction by Charlie to reel it in and to pounce over the line for it. It was really good. And when those chaotic moments happen and Vossi's on commentary, that sometimes they're the best moments because you never know what he's going to say. You never know what sort of Vossi-ism he's going to throw on the end of it. but there's a lot of good moments there. And for Charlie, who has had a bit of a rough year so far, who has copped a fair bit of criticism, like you mentioned, I really was happy for him to score the double.
Righto, let's get into your player rating. So firstly, Benji, still around that mid sort of mark. Look, more than half of you said a 5 or a 6, a few decent amount of 7s as well. So plenty of faith still in King Benji. And I think, yeah, look, we all know he's learning on the job. It's the youngest side. Shout out to, I can't remember who posted it today, the graph of, it was basically comparing the inexperience and the age of the rosters. And on this graph, it was unbelievable. I didn't realize just how young and inexperienced our West Tigers side is. So, I know you could be patient every year, but Benji's learning. There's a lot of players that are learning. So I think despite the years and years of failure and only having won 2 games so far, I think we all can kind of see a bit of light at the end of the tunnel. Righto, player ratings wise, so a tie for the top with Lockie Galvin and Appy Carousel getting 78.6%, with Charlie Staines not far behind with 71%, and not far after that is Naden. Any numbers there, Rob? I don't know how well you can see it on your phone there, but any numbers or lines that are a bit rough? I think Charlie maybe should have deserved a little bit more out in front.
I think I can see, I'm trying to focus in, I think I can see Jareem Buller's numbers are down, which would be very much right. I would totally agree with that. Do you mind me asking, Josh, what have we got Johnny Bateman at? What numbers did he get?
Johnny Bateman, he's down at 38%. Not much love for Johnny Bateman in this one.
There's 62% of people that don't see the game the same as me. Let me put it that way. I know Johnny made some mistakes, like he dropped a ball trying to offload it, and I think Payne Haas, you know, ran through him for the try. I honestly, his performance in terms of how hard he tried and effort was Appy Carousel-like. His output, how hard he ran, his line speed, most of his defence. I thought Bateman was brilliant. So for his numbers to be that low, just give yourselves an uppercut. I do not agree with that.
As?
I'm quite... I think a lot of the numbers are pretty good. I was curious to see what Solomon Aliamalu was going to score, by the way. Apparently that's the pronunciation, as I heard on the Behind the Roar episode last week from Chris Warren. So I'm going to be using that one going forward. I thought he was quite solid. So 62% for him, I feel, is maybe a little bit low. I probably would have thought maybe up around 70, 75%. But seeing that the top scorers were in the 78% region kind of makes that make a bit more sense. So it I guess, averages it out a little bit. I don't want to get too deep into some of the players who I thought played really well, because that'll spoil my 3-2-1 since we haven't gotten to that yet. But some of the ones on the lower end, it's a bit of a shame to see Jareem so low. It was probably the worst game he's played since his debut, which is saying something because he's been quite solid. And then, yeah, overall, I thought a lot of players in the team played a solid game, and I honestly this week found it really hard to choose a player to give 3 to, because it was kind of, I guess, not so much an average performance, but rocks and diamonds is probably the way I'd describe most of our team.
Yep, definitely. Fanua Pole, well, Jareem Buller got by far the most down votes. After that, it was Aiden Caesar, but also Fanua Pole. Obviously, the dumb penalty, Rob, probably has a lot to do with that downvote.
Yeah, there's definitely that one. Look, I don't, like I said, I actually found, like Aaron said, I found the 3-2-1s. I found the one particularly difficult. I can say who I didn't give one to, but I actually thought they had some really good games. I thought Naden was really good. I thought he did his job. He didn't get beaten by his man. He didn't get much involvement, but whenever Ice Papali'i was involved, his defense was hard. He ran hard. Even when he charged down that ball in the last minute, he was still going it at 100 miles an hour. And just in general, guys, I know that last try means nothing in the sense that it was a consolation try and we threw it around like hot potato. But to me, that sums up the West Tigers this year. We don't give up. Like, we could have just said, screw it, I'll just die with the ball. I don't want to do anything embarrassing. I don't want to throw an intercept. But we just kept having a go, and we got a try. And look, I'm really sort of clutching at some small positives there. But I just think that's a really good sign that the boys just keep trying their best, no matter what the situation is, no matter how dire it looks. And we came up with we actually got a bounce from a kick that we deserved for all that effort in offloading and not dying with the ball. And I just think that's just a characteristic of this team this year. Like, it's not going to mean much if we keep losing by 20 or 30 every week. But again, a lot of people have said this week, you know, how many games have we said that the old West Tigers would have lost by 50 here, or would have lost by 60 or 70? So I just feel like there's just a different team there. In terms of your numbers there, guys, I think if Appy doesn't come off in that second half, he's going to be our best player for the match. He was obviously hurt by that Xavier Willison tackle when he slammed him on his back. But I thought Appy was probably our best player. But I couldn't give him, you know, man of the match when he came off with 25 minutes left, which is kind of why I just thought Bateman was sensational, like stood out above from everyone else.
As to Roger, your 3-2-1, Rob just did his.
Yeah, no worries. I gave my 3 to Lockie. The way he led the team around, I thought was quite solid. I gave my 2 to Samuel Afenu. Honestly, I probably would have given him my 3 if not for the brain explosion. I thought he was pretty close to our best player. A lot of hard runs, a lot of tough carries, really solid in attack. And I thought defensively he was quite solid too. And Stainsy got my 1. I really liked seeing his game, and obviously some really good finishes for a couple of really good tries. And obviously we touched on it before, particularly you, Rob, the way he was smart enough to put that kick through instead of trying to catch it for that first try. Credit to him. Really well-deserved double.
And based on your votes, Lockie Galvin got 3, Appy Korosau got the 2, and Charlie Staines got the 1. I'm seeing Charlie getting 1 across the board. I'm seeing double here. I can see Chalice. One of the Simpsons fans there. 3-2-1 leaderboard. So Appy's right up the clacker of Stefano there, 21 to 21.5. Lockie not far behind on 20. So a bit of a three-horse race at the moment. So, I mean, that's a good thing. Righto, stats man, you got anything for us out of this one?
I do have a stat for us tonight, but it's not to do with the Tigers game. I'm going to give all you guys a little bit of an insight into the way my brain works in these sort of things on occasion. So I'm sitting there watching three really interesting games of footy on Anzac Day. I see the Roosters put 60 on the Dragons on in the second game, and then I'm watching the third game, and I see the Storm. They look like they're about to put a score on onto the Rabbits, and I start thinking to myself, I don't know if I've ever seen an occasion or a day in football where two consecutive games have had teams put 50 points on their opponent. So that was what I went and looked for this week. Basically, was there, or when was the last time we had two consecutive games on the same day have teams hit 50? And I found
this is my guess. Did it happen during the COVID bubbles?
No.
Because that's when some of the floggings were huge in that era.
There were, and there were some rounds where there were like two or three games where a team scored 50. First of all, I had a look for when the last time two scores at 50 in the same round. And that was 2023 round 18. We remember it well. The Cowboys 74 and the Knights 66 on their opponents. I won't say who those were, although we all probably know. But back on Sunday, the 3rd of August in 2014, the Rabbits put 50 on Newcastle and the Warriors put 54 on the Raiders. That was the last time we had two consecutive 50-plus scores in a day.
I don't know how you found that, but that sounds a long and tedious task. So, well done. I wouldn't have a clue how to look that up without going score by score for the last several years. Nice work. Stats in this game, 50-50 possession completion rate-wise, better than the Broncos. We were 29 of 40. They were 26 of 38, so slightly better there. Post-contact meters, roughly the same. Line breaks, they had 6-3. Tackle breaks, pretty much the same. Play the balls, pretty much identical. Offloads, 17-6 in our favor. Rob, that kind of backs up your argument that the boys were kind of playing a little bit more second phase footy.
I'd say about a third of those offloads came in the last try, Josh. So it might not be a true reflection of how the game panned out. But yeah, look, I thought we tried to play a little bit more expansive. Even like you'll get to the running meter shortly too, Josh. But I don't know if everyone else sort of found this as well. But I noticed Steph was doing a lot more of that catch at first receiver and sort of be the pivot and sort of get the ball out to start a backline movement, whereas his running meters were quite down. I think he had something like 70 meters. So just interesting how we use Stefano this week as opposed to using him how we normally use him, like a Payne Haas and hoping he gets those 150 meters or so. He just kind of played that sort of Toddy Payton role we used to have about 10, 15 years ago.
Meters game-wise, Charlie Staines was top of the table there, 100 for Tigers anyway, 166. David Clemmer, 146. And then Ale Marlowe, is that how you say it as?
Alia Marlowe.
Alia Marlowe.
Yep.
Okay. I'll practice that one. Post contact meters, Clem with 60 had the most there. Line breaks, only one each for Ale Marlowe, that guy, you know what I'm talking about. Charlie Staines and Brent Naden all had one apiece. Hit up wise, 14 for Johnny Bateman, 6 tackle breaks for Charlie Staines. Offload wise, 3 each for Naden, Galvin, and Bateman. You mentioned Bateman here. He's, again, his pale little face is popping up all over the spreadsheet for the stats here. 45 tackles, so almost top. I think I might have that the wrong way around. Is that right? Did Fainu get the most? 47? I think I might have got those around. I might have put their pictures around. Can you confirm that for me as the tackle counts?
I'll look it up right now while you're talking.
I don't think Fainu had them. Surely he didn't have the most. Surely Bateman did. But
given he went to the sin bin, it'd be a pretty good achievement if he did.
Yeah, I think it was. I think I've got the faces around the wrong way there. But
did he stay on? Did he stay on for the whole game? Except for obviously that 10-minute sin bin period.
I think so.
Righto, Benji Marshall.
Sorry, Josh, I found it. Yep. Bateman was the most tackles, 45.
Yep. Righto, let's get into Benji Marshall's press conference. We might just touch on one here because we're really flogging the time tonight. Let's talk about talking about how he's proud of the effort.
No, really proud. I thought for 63 minutes there we played a brand of footy that we've talked about wanting the team we wanted to be.
That's and last for
63
week.
Minutes there we were.
That's why it says Panthers. That's why I was looking at the wrong one. Unless you had it labeled as Panthers.
I heard this week's presser and I knew I'd heard
that. Yeah.
It's about believing in your process and what you're doing. And again, I thought, and I said to the team, we showed moments tonight, especially the way we started the first half. And we did it against Penrith for 63 minutes. You know, and I guess everyone just wants us to turn it around overnight. It doesn't happen like that. You know, there's things that need to improve. I thought we had moments at the start of our season where our defence had got better. Our attack still hasn't clicked. So we've still got a lot of work to do. But it doesn't happen overnight. But there are improvements that we're seeing. But we need to hold on to those for longer periods in the game.
I'll bring up Deno's comment here because I noticed this straight away when I watched this on YouTube. The boys are sitting in front of the Broncos sponsors, which is... I don't know what happened there, but I don't think
there's supposed to be people who work for the NRL who change these over between press conferences, and why they couldn't be asked to do it for us on Saturday. Maybe that's a bit more of an indication that the NRL really don't give a shit about us.
A certain law firm might be a little bit upset about that. But anyway, Rob, thoughts on what Benji said there?
I agree with him, and it is frustrating, and all the fans are sick of hearing, you know, yeah, there's little bits of improvement, this, that, and the other, but he's 100% right. It can't happen overnight, and I hope it happens next year, but it can't happen next year if, you know, Taruva's playing with someone he hasn't played with before, or Luai hasn't played a game with Galvin. Like, the things do take time, but there's just, I was worried at the start of the year, given what Benji had said pre-season about the cattle that he's got, et cetera, that we were going to play this really bland, like extra boring Penrith style without the razzle-dazzle and just go set for set, grind for grind. And, you know, we identified Brisbane's left because they had Jock Madden, who hadn't played out there with that second rower, and Jesse Arthurs, who hadn't played left centre all year, and Corey Oates has only been there for a couple of weeks. So we identified that and we went after that edge. And I just liked the way we played. It just, like I said, it was the buller drop balls and leg pulls and, you know, some decisions that didn't go our way, not just the ones we've mentioned. But, you know, I still remember Adam Reynolds putting a kick up and Jordan Rickey was 2 metres offside, was never called inside the 10 metres. Things like that, they're just, they're frustrating. But We played probably the best team in the comp. And let's be real, guys, they were 3 scores ahead in last year's grand final, you know. So they're a really good team. I thought the first half was really good. I think we really were terrible the first 15 minutes of the second half. But again, I feel like Appy was injured or something. He didn't look the same in the second half. Maybe it was that hit on Willison that he copped, but I'm proud of the boys, and I actually, to be fair, guys, I mean, maybe I'm used to losing now, but I really enjoyed the day out. I loved going to the club before the game, meeting people, got to catch up with some people that listen to the show, Rob and his young son, Liam, a guy called Jason, got to catch up with Brendan in the club who's on our Discord. Joe Alafaci's always there. Kathy, Ashton. Like, it's just good to catch up with all the regulars and meet new people and just support the team. And it's just good to see a packed crowd at Campbelltown, guys. They're little things, but to see Campbelltown full, granted there were a lot of Broncos fans there, but Campbelltown full 2 weeks in a row for the team that came last year, Leichhardt packed in its one and only game. There's a lot of love and support for the Tigers. So I just hope we just all keep that enthusiasm up. I know the team are showing glimpses of it. It's going to come good one day, guys. And when it does, it's just going to be absolutely magical.
Maybe we should organise a time before the next home game is not to Leichhardt round 15 or something, but maybe half time we'll meet outside the merch tent or something. And if anyone wants to come have a chat, we'll have a half time debrief and have a chat with everyone. So I'll play Benji's other one because it calls out the Geelongs. It's pretty funny.
An excellent crowd tonight, but that's the 10th straight loss in Campbelltown. Hmm. Is it time to take all the games to Leichhardt?
What do you want to do?
Well, it's a great support though, isn't it?
I'm not going to answer.
17,000 people.
Yeah, our fans are great. They've turned up here twice in a row for home games. But we can't, because of the loss, say, let's go and change everything. We just need to perform better. That's it. That's a silly question, man.
It was a silly question.
Yeah, don't ask it.
He's so good. Yeah, I didn't think I could love the man anymore, but his press conferences are just, he's so good. I love Benji Marshall.
You can see what he's learning from Wayne Bennett, can't you?
Aaron, can I throw you under the bus? You might know this off the top of the head or you might not. Everyone's got this bullshit mystical illusion about Leichhardt Oval, which I love. It's my favourite ground. It's absolute church and home to me, okay? Prior to the Cowboys game when on Brooksy's whatever game it was, 200th, 300th, whatever it was, where we put a big score on them, when was the last freaking time we'd won at Leichhardt except for beating Penrith without players? Like,
I was sitting next to you. The Bulldogs game, we better beat the Bulldogs. I was literally sitting next to you.
Okay, so Penrith,
the
Bulldogs.
The one where Jacko went to the bin for 10 minutes.
So we've won four games in about 7 years there, and everyone makes out like it's a fortress. Like, we've lost everywhere. Everywhere. It doesn't matter if it's Campbelltown or Leichhardt or whatever.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean we're going to win all our games at Leichhardt. It's just, you know, I get we've got a bad record at Campbelltown. We haven't won there for 4 years. But if we played Brisbane there, you know, who are coming up the top of the comp every year, I guarantee we'd lose there every year too. Like, maybe give us, I don't know, Gold Coast Titans or someone there every year and see what our record's like at Campbelltown. Like Benji nailed it, guys. We got two full Campbelltown crowds. We want to grow that area. We want to get the support up in that area. We're just got to be better. As someone said in the Discord, man, it's still a patch of grass. Doesn't matter what suburb it's in. It's still a patch of grass. You still got to play the same way to win your footy games. So I think we just got to stop bashing Campbelltown. I actually thought the atmosphere was a lot better than the St. George game, even though it was a packed house both times. I felt like the St. George crowd, we were a little bit, I don't know, nervous or quiet or something, but I just thought it was a really good afternoon at Campbelltown on Saturday.
It'd be nice if we scored the first try.
Sorry, Josh.
Sorry, guys. No, I was just saying, if we score the first try, look at the crowd. Go, guys.
Our next game at Campbelltown is the week after our next game at Leichhardt, and it's against the Raiders. They might still not have Jamal Fogarty there, and I'm pretty sure players are going to be out for Origin. So what do you think our chances at this stage are of winning that next one?
Well, we're the ones most likely to be missing players for Origin as opposed to Canberra, because all the good Canberra players are Kiwis. Like Topine, and I mean, I know Papali'i's retired from rep footy, but their props are really their rep players. Their other blokes and Englishmen. Who would they have that could make the rep? They're going to have no one. Timiko's not going to make New South Wales centre.
Like, Hudson Young, I think, played Origin last year or the year before.
Yeah, Hudson Young's not going to make it. So I don't think they lose anyone to Origin, but we're a big chance of losing Appy as a hooker and possibly Steph as a prop on the bench. So it's actually going to affect us more than it'll affect them.
Mm.
Actually, someone did mention that you might be Benjamin's mentioning. Apparently, they did a Tigers chant over the speakers, like the Eels as.
Yes, they did.
They did.
Yeah.
They were practicing it and making sure it worked. I think at halftime of the it was either halftime of the flag game or after full time of the flag game. I guess they learnt from Para that one works to drum up a little bit of a chant. But in saying that, ours was nowhere near as long as Para's. Para's went on for like almost a minute. Ours went for like maybe 20 seconds.
How many Tigers? How many can you remember off the top of your head? How many times did they say Tigers in it?
Eight or nine at most.
Oh, nine?
It wasn't eight or nine, was it?
Six, seven, somewhere around there. It was more than five, but less than 10.
Three. Paris, you get three. Do three. Done. Three. If the crowd doesn't catch on to it after three, stop the fucking MP3. Don't do it. That's embarrassing.
Paris lasted an entire set, which means it lasted
Para.
About a minute. So Paris we were nowhere near that long.
Yeah, fuck Para. Right, on to your comments. Our comment of the week, as you guys at this week, do you want to read out Craig Aquilina? Aquilina, that's a cool sounding name. I hope I pronounced that right, Craig. But he sent us an email, podcast@westlife.com, mate, and I'll get them to organise your $50 dining voucher. Go for it, Az.
No worries. It's the Broncos, so not looking too deep into this game, but we need to give Galvin more space with the ball. Easily our X factor in attack. Couple of players with off nights, but hard to get up when you constantly get calls going against you. Morale would have dropped after that Appy no try. Could have been a totally different game. Besides his brain explosion, Samuela, once again, one of our best. Kid could be anything.
Righto. Waters sipped. Let's go through your comments. Jared Hunt said, to many fans expecting this team and club to do a full 180 overnight, when we have been destroyed for the last 10 years from within, playing what should be the number one contender for the grand final. Yes, we were bad tonight. Yes, we can't get the calls. Yes, it is frustrating, and all we want are wins, but it's a long way off. Benji, you're so raw. It's not fair. Hell, you could blame the preserve pinheads for us having him there. I think he means previous pinheads. Our time will come. It's fantastic to finally see growth in and around the club itself. For now, my joy is coming from the club as a whole, finally moving forward. We will get there, up the Tigers. Kim R. said, what is it about Campbelltown? We never win there. We need to work on our attack. Had so much ball inside the red zone, it didn't capitalize. The first set, we spread it, looked good. Then we went back in our shell, running out for five, then kicking. Appy must be totally frustrated. Does it all on his own. When he scores, it's denied. I never expected this year to make finals, but the more games we lose, our heart with it. We are better than wooden spooners. Come on, boys, start showing it. Look, hopefully the Rabbitohs keep losing. That's all we can hope. Look, doggies this week. I reckon I'm tipping the Tigers this week to win. Can be, as long as Appy plays. Can be, the bunker says, the bunker loves screwing us harder than the cost of living crisis hates poor people. We were outplayed at every step. The repeated kick to the guts takes the drive out of the players. Phil Rogers said, yes, we got some dud decisions in the first half, but that was awful. Caesar showed he's at Super League level now. Our structured attack was really poor. We only looked dangerous playing off the cuff footy. Benji, please don't play Bateman at lock again. We lose too much on our edge attack. Do you guys agree with that? Do you think Bateman's better on the edge or in the middle?
I think he's better on the right edge, but I thought he tried his ass off. I thought he was our best player, but I hear what he's saying. Look, he did get to ball play a little bit, and he put their defence in two minds, but I think he's a natural right-sided player. But again, even if he does play an edge, we're going to have him on the left edge with Lockie Galvin. So I don't know what the answer is, guys, but we'll just leave it up to Benji and see what he works out. One thing I will say about Caesar, because Caesar was mentioned in that comment, and not trying to be too negative, but should we lose to Canterbury this week, which I hope we don't, but should we lose to Canterbury, I think it might be just time to say, you know what, 2024 is going to be a write-off. Let's get Lasu into the halves and let him partner up with Lockie and just let him just learn, man, and have some fun. Because, I mean, Caesar tries hard. There's no doubt about it, but he's just making too many errors. He's a bit of a liability in defence. I know we need his experience at certain times, but given his experience, the fact that he didn't isolate Dean Mariner a couple of times with kicks after he'd show that he was going to drop the ball all night. I just thought, from someone that experienced, that's just really pretty poor thinking. It's just, I'd expect better from a 16-year-old than someone like Caesar not to take advantage of that.
Speaking of the Bulldogs, everyone knows a Bulldogs fan that would be good on the show. Send them our way. Tell them to DM us or tweet us or podcast at westlife.com for Wednesday night's show. Mark Kerwood said, if we're building, we need Lockie and Latu to be 6'7". Basically what you're saying right here, Rob. Yeah. Season fatigue, solid start. A good mentor for them both, though. Aside from the usual refs, anti-target decisions, there's still some laziness in defence causing us problems. We're still on the up, but still a long way to go. Ryan said, I hate saying this, but we're so boring to watch. What has happened from round 2 to 3? We only scored when we just threw it around a bit. Very fortunate Brisbane were off as well. The third spoon is firming fast, unless I don't know what. Clearly, the players and coach can't fix it either. I feel like this week, we talked about it earlier, but I feel like this week they threw the ball around a bit more. Frankie said, as a dedicated fan who makes it a point to watch my beloved Tigers play every week, I've become increasingly disheartened by the recurring issue of major incorrect decisions made by officials. Each time I settle in to enjoy the game, there seems to be a pivotal call that drastically alters the course of the match. The recent debacle involving Abby was particularly disheartening, leaving me feeling not frustrated but downright hopeless. It's difficult to maintain enthusiasm for a sport that feels plagued by such injustices. Sounds like Lee Hatcher Patel's writing this. As an everyday supporter, I feel robbed not only of the fair competition I once loved, but also of the joy and camaraderie that used to accompany it. It's becoming increasingly difficult to point in investing emotionally when the very essence of the game seems compromised. Right, Rich Gilmore, he wrote, I did a workout. I've cut this down. Rich, you did 775 words in your essay that you wrote in this form. I'm obviously not going to be another 2 hours if I read all of it.
Cut down part?
I'm just going to summarize it a bit because we've already an hour and a half into the show. So I'm trying to think what his best one. He said, talk about the crowd. He said, the Bay 19-20-21 area, the premium $60 per adult seats. It was Broncos supporters everywhere. The whole area stood as one when Reynolds took the intercept on one leg and limped off. I said to my son at the time, I wonder if this feels like being a Blues supporter at Suncorp during State of Origin. The other positive for me, my Brisbane-born West Tigers supporting wife, her first time at Campbelltown. We didn't get the win, but it ticked off another box for me. Bringing her to the game, it's primarily been me, my eldest daughter, over the years at West Tigers game. I look forward once more to the day when we can support a winning team week in, week out. Seriously considering heading to West Asheville for the first time in 25 years next week, and maybe the atmosphere as a West Tigers win, lose, or draw will be better than the crowd at our home ground. Rich, I was having a crack at your essay. I should publish it because it was very, very well written. So
he also mentions Jordan Miller. What do you guys think of the Jordan Miller option?
I'm hearing from within the club guys that other than Galvin and sort of Macassini, I think some of these other guys in that Galvin group, we're not really looking to keep. So I feel like Jordan Miller's on the outer. Personally, that's from people I've spoken to. And just to be clear, I've never watched Jordan Miller play live. I don't know anything about the bloke other than he was meant to be the next big prop. But I'm hearing that, the club's gone off him a little bit. So whether that's true or not, I don't know, but that's just what I'm told.
All right, our tips for the week. You guys got 6, but I was an idiot and tipped the Dragons on Anzac Day and was well wrong with that one. But we'll do our tips on Wednesday night.
Well wrong is a bit of an understatement.
Look, it only counts for one. They don't count for and against. The Bears beat the Magpies again in New South Wales Cup, 28-16. That was at Campbelltown before the game. Did you guys get in there for the Cup?
I got in there about a quarter of the way through. I think we had a decent lead at the time before giving it up. Wasn't I didn't mind what Matamua produced. I thought he was pretty good. Got to see my first taste of Alex Lobb live, and no offence to Mr. Lobb, he didn't have a very good day at all. So a little bit disappointing there.
They are at the bottom of the table with just the one win. I'm trying to think of the top of my head. Who did they beat? Was it Combank Stadium? Was it the Eels?
Parramatta. It was the Eels. Parramatta. Yeah, it was the Eels. Yeah. You've forgotten the jersey flag, Josh. You've left the jersey flag out.
Have I? Yes, I did.
Yep. They were our one win for the week. I missed most of the first half, but at halftime they led 24-4, and were looking pretty good. They had a bit of a rough second half, bit of poor discipline, some silly penalties given away. Some of the penalties I didn't necessarily agree with, but we tend to get that a lot. Storm came back and made a real good game of it. They scored two fairly quick tries to get it back to a 10-point margin. And then we scored one to kind of get our margin back out to 14. And then they scored two tries with about 6 minutes to go and 4 minutes to go to get it to 28-24, with a couple more sets on us in those last couple of minutes. And we hung on grimly.
I was just noticing Cup Brewer got back-to-back tries. He would have enjoyed that. I think he scored against us when they played at North Sydney as well.
He
would have
enjoyed that.
Righto, so Saturday I went and watched the girls. They got, 36-0. I mean, this Bulldog side, as you warned me, you said that these girls, they won 90, put 90-plus on a couple of teams. So the girls were very brave to only lose 36-0. Seeing in light these Bulldogs girls, my God, like, look, Asada, if you're out there, all jokes aside, they were like, yeah, pretty incredible. I assume they're going to have plenty of girls in that side moving up. So, yeah, our girls, they tried hard. They got a few chances, just couldn't crack it. It literally was like watching women versus kids. It was crazy. So, shout out to the West Tigers girls. Harvey Norman, a few of the players will move up to Harvey Norman, I'm told, including halfback Ellie Barnett. I heard she's in the squad for the Harvey Norman, which starts, I think, in sync with NRLW season as?
I believe so. I'm pretty sure it's acting now as a reserve grade competition style thing for the NRLW. Yeah. And just on those Bulldogs, Josh, I will add... Yeah. The names in some of that team and their relations to current NRL, past NRL and current NRLW players. Abby Fuz, one of their players, granddaughter of Bulldogs great and 1980 premiership winner Gary Hughes. Aliana Fuimeano, the cousin of Talia Fuimeano, who plays for the Blues. And Paige and Trinity Toanie, who are the sisters of current NRLW Dragons prop Alexis Toanie. So they have a lot of football families coming through their system at the Dogs, and you could see how important all those players were.
Obviously big families too, because there was thousands of them at Combank Stadium. Oh, yeah. It was packed with them. The Harold Matz boys, I didn't see that. I had to leave the little family thing, but I believe they led early as and then got run down by the Warriors. Is that right?
Yeah, they led 10-0 after 8 minutes and were looking pretty good, but they kind of made a couple of silly mistakes. And I didn't get to see much of this game after the part where they led 10-0 because then I was on the road. And so I just checked the score when I got to Campbelltown and was very disappointed to see they had gotten run down. Disappointing end to their season, but full credit to the Warriors. Their finals run involved beating third, then first, and then second. Between those three teams, there were zero losses. So they beat three teams with zero losses to win the grand final. So a massive effort to them. Also, shout-outs to Amasi Makassini, who won the award for player of the season for not the grand final, but for the entire competition.
Super chats, I think we did. We covered all three of us super chatters tonight. Yep. Thanks to Mick, Shane, and Brendan. and our members, our YouTube members as well, and our Patreon members, patreon.com/WestLife. I might save, look, we're at 100 minutes into the show. I do this every Monday. I promise we'll play their rants, but we'll save it for Wednesday. Sorry, guys. It's 100 minutes, yeah, into the show. So we need a bit of content for Wednesday after we talk about the game. So shouts. Do love yous all. The Discord been firing off. NBA playoff discussion, soccer. Rob Sudamis, maybe not talk about your horse tips. I don't think none of them got up.
Why not?
Was there a winner amongst them? Did you?
There was a winner in 2 seconds, and both guys got up.
Maybe the one guy back.
I did have, unfortunately, the left. I put Murray Tuilagi, but obviously I meant Velame. When you picked up that Murray Tuilagi was out, I had Velame and I had Mariner, and they both scored. So
I apologize. You
You're welcome.
I was just annoyed that I didn't back him.
Yeah, right, back him. Seem to win when you don't back them, actually.
Yeah. Wednesday, we'll preview Tigers v Doggies. Looking forward to heading to that one on a Saturday afternoon. Hopefully the weather's not too bad. But yeah, we'll talk about that Teamless Tuesday tomorrow. Boys, anything to add before we say good night to Big Dog?
No, all good, guys. Catch you Wednesday.
As?
No, nothing else for me either.
Beautiful. Thank you very much to, I saw, look, 100 minutes in and there was about 70 or 80 of you that stuck solid with us. Look, 101 minutes in. Stuck solid with us all night, over 100 minutes, more than a game of rugby league. We try to make these episodes shorter, but it's just so much to talk about. We love our club. We love the passion. We love you joining us. And please join us again on Wednesday. If you're listening back on the audio, try to, yeah, get on the YouTube, subscribe, join us on 8:30 on Wednesday night if you can. And until then, boys, go the Tigers.
Go the Tigers.
Go the Tigers.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the West Life Podcast. Please follow us at West Life Pod on Instagram and Twitter and facebook.com/West Life Pod. You can also support and take part in the show at patreon.com/West Life. And give us a subscribe on YouTube and turn notifications on. We'll see you again next time on another episode of the West Life Podcast.